Welcome to the third session of the audio series associated with the Motivate Your Child Action Plan book. Now, I think it'd be helpful as we're trying to help you develop your next step in your plan to talk a little bit more about the MAP mentality and what the MAP mentality is. Why did we choose those words and what's different then? So, Joanne, why don't you share a little bit about the MAP mentality?
Sure. We often use those words, MAP mentality, when we're talking about parenting. Developing a strategy for your child. What we mean is we want to move a child on a map from point A to point B. And what this is, it's in contrast to what many people find themselves doing in their parenting that we call reactive parenting. You see a problem, you just react to it, try and get rid of the problem. But what we want to have is more of a strategy to move the child forward from point A to point B. And to envision that as a map, where are we on the map right now? Are we over here at point A where we have a problem? We're looking forward to point B where we've got some solutions to that problem and some character development. How can we move the child closer to point B in life? Let's develop some strategies to move forward.
I think some parents also have a T-chart mentality or what I would call a justice mentality when it comes to working with their kids. You did this, so you deserve that. In fact, sometimes we're working with parents with a MAP mentality and they'll say, but he needs a consequence. He did the wrong thing, so he needs a consequence. Remember, the goal of discipline is a changed heart. It's not justice. And some parents who focus on justice often miss the child's heart, thinking that by providing justice, they're able to somehow balance the scales or something like that. It's a mistake, I think. We really want our children to grow and develop. That takes a little bit of strategy and work, and so this MAP mentality guides us in that direction.
Now, we're still going to use consequences from time to time with a MAP mentality, but they're not used to execute justice. The consequences are used to motivate change, and that becomes a significant difference with a heart-based approach to parenting. The use of consequences is either to make point A uncomfortable or to motivate the child toward point B. So we want the child to understand in life certain things aren't going to work, the way they're acting, the things they're doing are not going to be successful for them. They're going to maybe create some pain in their life. And so that should motivate the child to do things a little bit differently, to avoid the pain, to move toward a more appropriate response. So sometimes we'll still use consequences, but it's certainly not the only tool we want to use. We want to be thinking bigger picture. How do I move my child from point A to point B? Sometimes consequences are a piece of that, but there's a whole lot more to the strategy.
What we're trying to suggest here is that when we get a map out, we can tell what direction we're going. We know where we are now, where we want to go to, and we can choose the streets. We can choose the path, the best path to get there. There are a lot of good ways to get to point B. We have to find the way that's best for this particular child to get from point A to point B. And that's where the work comes in. And it involves a lot of different strategies. So this book is an opportunity for you to develop a specific plan for your child in order to help that child to change.
And so as we've said before, point B is a character quality that we're moving toward, that we're helping the child to develop. And we can even think about where we are on the map. Are we getting closer to seeing kindness in a child? Are we getting closer to seeing more responsibility, more maturity, thinking about others? Are we moving closer to that, or do we need to adjust our route so that we can get closer to the goal?
So when we say point A to point B, we're trying to locate ourselves in this particular plan to move forward. And I think that helps a lot of parents. Now, maybe you're listening to this series and your child isn't experiencing a particular problem, or maybe you have several kids and there's one child in particular you're trying to develop a plan for and you're wondering what to do with the others. You don't have to always use this plan for every child. The point is, though, that every one of us as parents are in the task of trying to help our children to change and to grow and to develop. Now, change doesn't necessarily mean that our kids are always doing the wrong thing. If you have a child who seems to be pretty responsible moving forward, that's good, but that child's still changing and growing and developing. So we want to develop a plan for that child that encourages them on along the same path and opens up new avenues and doors for them so that they can continue moving in that right direction. Even if sometimes we might just define the change as responsibility or maturity, what does it look like for a child to be growing through the developmental stages and be developing the godly character necessary to handle the challenges in life.
Sometimes parents will ask us, I'm not really sure what to expect of a six-year-old, or what should I be expecting of an eight-year-old or a 10-year-old? And really what we're looking for is change. We're looking for progress. Is the child being more responsible than he was last week? Is he able to do his chores more independently than he did before, more thoroughly? Is he able to do things more independently than he has before? So we're looking for progress in a child's life. Even if it's not a particular problem area, children need to always be moving forward as they're growing.
I think it's important to recognize that some children will be willing to cooperate more than others on this plan. If you have a child who's willing to cooperate, and we find many are if we find the right kind of strategies, that is, we're able to do the visioning that we need to, or we provide the right number of consequences or the right kind of consequences that prompt a child to be motivated internally, or we help them understand through a coaching approach that we're on their side, some of those things click with kids, and the cooperation that may not have been there before is now present, and we delight in seeing that in families. We find that when we work this plan, many parents are able to connect with their kids in ways that their kids are now more cooperative and moving forward. And so we hope that that's the case for you. We wish that were the case for all. But we do find that some children still resist no matter what plan you take because they have a pretty strong will and the will isn't always directed in the right direction. So I want you to know that even if your child isn't cooperative, if your child isn't responding, then you have the opportunity to still work your plan and will embrace some pieces of the plan that will try to embrace that desire to move your child forward, even though the child may not be that interested in doing so. It's all part of how we position ourselves as parents. Some kids have to do more research in life to figure out for themselves that there's a right way to live. And so your job is to be there, to position yourself well, point the signs in the right direction so your kids know that this is where we're going. It's not acceptable to live the way you are. And we're going to do all we can to help you move and make some changes in the right direction.
So the reality is that some children are more responsive to their parents than others. Some kids are more responsive to the leadership of others, and some just have to learn on their own. But what we're going to do here, as we're developing a strategy for each individual child, is we're pointing the way, we're saying this is where we're going, and we're building relationship into the process. Some children resist that, but they need relationship whether they're resisting it or not. So we're looking for ways to build relationship, have positive experiences with our children in the midst of the pressure we have to put on them. And over time, sometimes kids come around and they begin to value that relationship a little bit more. But whether they do or not, as parents, we want to be faithful, keeping that goal in mind and moving forward.
Now, the whole emphasis of this particular curriculum is to motivate your child. And motivation is the study of why people change. And then taking that understanding, which may be different for each individual, and making application in a way that prompts that particular person to change most effectively. That motivation is going to be very important. Some children today rely pretty heavily on external motivation, and many families use external motivation quite a bit, and so making the switch to internal motivation can be challenging. We're going to walk you through that process as we continue on so that you are developing the internal motivation in your child. And one key element we want to share with you right now. This is going to help you know how to build that internal motivation so your child's on the same team as you moving forward. Whether he likes it or not, we're moving forward. And we're going to give you some ideas in order to do that. That idea that we want to share with you now is transferring responsibility to the child. Now, this is very important. Please don't misunderstand us. We're not saying what we do is we say to kids, okay, you solve it, and I'm going to leave you alone to do it. We're not saying that. What we're saying is we're involving children in the process, requiring that they help come up with some solutions and holding them accountable to the solutions they come up with so that they can continue to modify their plan and then move forward in order to do that. This transferring responsibility is a key element in everything that we do with our parent training program. We transfer responsibility to children in a lot of different ways, and so we want you to understand what that looks like because it will enhance your child's cooperation level.
Now, I think this one idea becomes really eye-opening for parents, because as parents, we're working with our kids, we're giving them instruction, we're teaching them how to do things, we're moving them along in life, helping them get out the door in the morning and helping them get their things together and remember what they need to take. And we do a lot of directing of traffic throughout family life. And in our hearts, we want our children to begin to take this on for themselves. Often in our own minds, we would define that as responsibility and being more mature, not needing to be told what to do. And yet we don't know how to make the jump to get there. We just keep giving the instructions, wishing our children would start doing it on their own. But when we talk about this transferring responsibility to the child, we begin to develop a different way of talking to our children that sparks something inside of them, helps them create the to-do list, the agenda, so they know where they're headed. It's not just our agenda for them now, but it's their own agenda, and they're more able to keep on track, and that's where that internal motivation comes from. So really opens up some new doors for parents as we're thinking this through. And what does it mean to transfer responsibility to the child?
Let's take an example of the child who's not very cooperative, the child who resists. Sometimes those children are labeled with an oppositional defiant disorder label. An oppositional defiant disorder is simply a pattern that a child's developed of reacting negatively to some authority. So if someone's saying, let's go this way, the child says, I want to go this way. Parent says it's white, the child says it's black. So that oppositional pattern has created some challenges, of course, in the ability to cooperate. One of the ways that we try to break that down is to transfer responsibility to the child in the instruction routine. So when parents give children instructions, it takes place in a routine. You say certain things, you approach instructions regularly in a particular way. We want to adjust that a bit so that children are having to take some responsibility for the instruction giving and receiving process. One of the things we do is we require a child to report back. Now we've transferred responsibility to the child, and the child has the responsibility to come back and say, I've completed the task. If you have to continue to check up on the child, go to the child, check and see if the child's done, the child's not reporting back, then there's a problem. And so we may have to practice the instruction-giving process to teach a young person or a child how to report back. Your job is to do the job and report back. If you can do that, then you can be free to go. If you can't do that, we're going to do another instruction. You need to initiate, not always be responding to me. And initiating means you're going to come back and tell me that the job is done. That's a way that we transfer responsibility to a child in the instruction giving process.
What we're communicating to the child is, hey, this is your responsibility to get this done and report back. I'm not going to stay on you. You need to take this on for yourself. It communicates a sense of a vote of confidence, I would say, in the child. Hey, you can handle this. I will just wait until you get the job done, and then you come back and let me know that it's done.
Another way that we transfer responsibility is in the correction process. A child who tends to be belligerent or angry when corrected needs a different response. So what we will do is encourage parents to use what we call a break. And the break has a child go sit down for a little bit. But the key element here that we're talking about in the break is that the child has the responsibility to come back, to initiate to come back. Now the child has to come to the conclusion, okay, I'm ready, and return. Some children, of course, come back too early, and we have to say, nope, sorry, don't look like you're ready. And some children are there, and we have to coax them out because they're unwilling to come out. But the goal is, in the correction process, you need to go take a break, settle down, change your heart, come back and see me when you're ready. The child comes back and initiates to come out and said, I'm ready. And then we can go through and talk about some of the debrief with them about what happened. And so I would encourage you to use the break. It's a way of transferring responsibility to a child. And when you do that, the child has to settle down the heart. Instead of the parent then being responsibility for heart change, the child is responsible for heart change, and it makes the discipline process go a little bit easier as well.
And of course, this is very important. If we're really expecting our children to have a change of heart, they need to take responsibility for that. That's not something that a parent can do for a child. A parent could always execute some kind of a consequence and enforce that. In this kind of discipline where we're requiring a change of heart, that's something the child has to do. And so we just want to allow the time for that, have the child in the break alone and quiet, unentertained, not being involved in an activity, they need to examine their hearts and then come back and talk about it. So what we're saying is this problem is something you need to deal with. I'm ready to talk about it when you're ready, but you need to settle down. And so, again, we're transferring responsibility to the child because they're the ones who need to change their heart.
Another way that we transfer responsibility to a child is when a child's rather self-focused, wants to be first or best, or everything's about them. And when we see that particular kind of selfishness taking place in the home, we try to encourage parents to use honor therapy, we call it. Honor is a biblical concept, and therapy means practice. So let's practice some honor in the home here. Now, when we practice honor, we're teaching children that you need to see something that needs to be done that you aren't told to do. In other words, I want you to do something that's more than what's expected. I want you to treat people as special. I want you to think of three honor things that you can do before you're free to go. I want you to tell me what they are. Then I want you to go do them. And then I want you to come back and tell me that they're done. And when you do, I'll check your work, and then you're free to go. I'm not going to tell you what those things are because then it would be obedience. But when the child has to think of honor things, they have to look at what the other person needs or what the situation needs in that particular scenario. Now, that's important because, see, we're building internal motivation. In all three of these cases that we mentioned, the instruction routine, the break, dealing with honor, they're all transferring responsibility to the child. So the child has to think about the situation and has to respond well to it. That is helping children to make some changes on the inside. Now we're fostering this sense of internal motivation. We're going to bring that into other areas of parenting as well.
And I think this idea of transferring responsibility to the child empowers them to make some changes. It says, hey, you can handle this. I think you've got what it takes. I think you can take this on. You can bring about the change in your own heart. You can be responsible to manage your own to-do list. I believe in you. You're growing up. This is great. So it lends toward this positive attitude where the parent isn't trying to control the child, but the parent is empowering the child to make some changes, to take some ownership here, and to move forward with their own strategies.
Internal motivation takes place in the heart. That means it comes from within. Sometimes things that come from within aren't that great. Sometimes children are angry, and so they lash out. That's internal motivation, but it's not good. Sometimes children have a desire to do something. They might even steal something because they have a strong desire. That's internal motivation, but it's not good. So God has placed inside the heart a conscience. And the Holy Spirit also works inside the heart of a child as well. And so we want to help work where God is working. God has created this mechanism inside of a child's heart called the conscience. Now, if we can help children function in tune with that conscience, we're going to be working along with what God wants to do in that child's heart as well. Many of our children aren't even aware that they have a conscience. They just don't understand those promptings that are there. And when we start to bring some structure to that and help children understand it, it becomes more real to them. They're able to respond to it in more practical ways, and it frees them up to be more internally directed.
I think sometimes parents haven't spent much time thinking about the conscience, what it is, what is its purpose, how can we take advantage of it in a child's life. But the conscience is inside each one of our children. And it's a system for promptings that God has put there so that the child can stay on track without the parent giving always the instructions, but the child can get those promptings internally from the conscience, from the Holy Spirit, and move forward taking initiative. So understanding the conscience is an important key, I think, to developing that internal motivation in children.
Now, the conscience prompts children in four areas. It prompts anyone in four areas, but we're focusing on children here. And we get those four areas from the Bible. As we look at the scriptures, we see the word conscience used over and over again. And as we start analyzing all of those and see the context in which they're used, we see that there's a connection of the conscience to prompt us internally in four different ways. One of those ways is to do what's right. When we say do what's right, we're not just talking about morally right, but we're talking about doing the right thing. So the conscience prompts us in doing the right thing in several different ways, but it's a very practical approach that children can pick up whether they're young or old.
So this part of the conscience will help the child to be thorough with chores. This part of the conscience will help the child to take a stand for family values when out with friends. This part of the conscience helps the child to do the right thing when no one's watching. Very significant prompting, keeping the child on track even when no one's watching. It doesn't matter who's going to see what I do or not see it. The conscience is what we're responsive to.
When we're talking about doing what's right, we're taking initiative to make a decision to do what's right, even though no one's watching, even though it might be in opposition to peers, but doing what's right becomes important. So when children take initiative in this area, it can be demonstrating some things from the conscience. We just need to tie it in well. Now, things come from the heart, and kids can be motivated in a number of ways. It could be from the Holy Spirit that they're prompted. It could be from the conscience. It could be from their desires. It could be from their emotions. It could be from other things within the heart that are prompting. But we want to start tying things to the conscience because that's something that God built inside of the human heart to keep it going in the right direction. So if you can talk to a child who's just done something that's right about the strength of their conscience, that can be a real asset. One mom was pretty proud of her daughter, 14 years old, who was given permission to go watch a movie at the theater with some of the other friends. But when they got there, the movie was full. So the other friends decided, well, they'd just go into another movie. Well, this young lady knew that there were some standards, and mom had approved the one movie, but the other movie didn't seem to be the kind of movie that would be approved by their family values. So she said, I don't think we should do this, but the other girls, they wanted to go in anyway. So this one young lady said, no, I'm not going to do it. And so she hung out outside the theater, called her mom. Her mom came, picked her up, and her mom was proud of her for making a decision under a difficult circumstance. You know, it wasn't planned, but it was an ethical dilemma for the young lady. And mom was pleased that the young lady made a choice, a difficult one, but a choice to do what's right. And so mom tied that into her conscience and said, you know, I can trust you more in your life because I see that you're relying on the conscience that God has placed in your heart. And when God is at work in your life and he's given you promptings and the conscience is prompting you, then you can be more responsible without me present. So that gave mom some greater confidence in allowing her daughter some freedom in life.
As we're working with our children, we find that the conscience is a strategic thing to be talking about because we can't always be with them. We can't always be giving the instruction or the guidance, but we want to equip the conscience to be doing that. We want to be educating the conscience, helping children become sensitive to their conscience so that they can make those judgment calls when they don't have a particular instruction about a particular thing, whether I can see that movie or not. But there's something inside that says, I'm not quite sure this is the right thing to do, and they can listen to that internal prompting.
Let's talk about dealing with wrongs, because that's another area that the conscience prompts us in, obviously through the feeling of guilt that comes from a conscience. And sometimes children don't respond well to that. They need to learn how to respond well to that. So let's talk about how the conscience affects a child in this area of dealing with wrongs.
Well, sometimes a child does the wrong thing. They get that prompting from the conscience, which we would say is guilt, the emotion of guilt, but they don't respond very well to that guilt. They want to get rid of it. It feels uncomfortable. They want to defer to someone else. So they blame the problem on other people. They make excuses for themselves. They rationalize. They justify. They don't take responsibility because although the conscience is prompting them, they don't respond well to that prompting.
I think one of the challenges is the emotion attached to correction is often anger, defensiveness, it's just built in. And so that's why the break we talked about earlier is so strategic in correction. When you say to a child, you need to go take a break, the child has to settle down. And that what that does is it lowers the emotional level so that the conscience has a little bit more room to work. And then the conscience can prompt a child often to look at the mistake they've made or the sin they've committed or the foolishness that they've enacted. And then they're more ready to address it. So pulling down the emotion a bit, allowing the conscience to work in this area of guilt or producing in the child this remorse can be helpful. Now, some parents, they don't see that remorse in their kids, and it takes a little bit of work to develop that over some time in a person. So we want to be patient, but we're going to work in that area of the conscience as well, dealing with wrongs.
And I think as parents, we can encourage that remorse by responding that way ourselves. Sometimes when kids do the wrong thing, parents are, their first response would be one of anger. And really what we want to do as parents is to control that response of anger. And if we were to respond with a softer, more sorrowful response, it's sad the child is making that choice, then I think it would be more appropriate and more responsive of the child than to respond that same way, not with anger and defensiveness, but a sadness as well.
A third area of the conscience has to deal with honesty, be honest. Romans 9:1 says, I speak the truth, I am not lying, my conscience confirms it in the Holy Spirit. And it's just another indicator right from the Bible that we have the conscience prompting us in this area of honesty.
And often we do realize that, we think about that, we know that the conscience is stirred when we're dishonest, when we say something that's not quite true. We want to help children become sensitive to that and develop an internal commitment to a life of integrity. It's not just about who's going to catch me or not catch me, but internally committed to integrity.
Integrity is important. It's going to be the way children develop honesty in their lives, and they need to understand that. So there's some things we can do with that prompter. The fourth prompter has to do with caring about others. It's the compassion side, thinking about other people, not just thinking about myself.
And certainly we want to develop that as an internal prompting, help children be sensitive to that, and so that they're not just thinking about others when they have to, but they're choosing to because they're internally prompted to care about others. Some kids are good at that. Others need some training, some sensitivity training to that prompting. But that's a goal we can all be moving toward, is to be more thoughtful of others.
Recently, I heard of the story of the 10-year-old boy who was out in 103-degree weather waiting for the garbage man to come by so he could give him a cold Gatorade. That's compassion. And that's what we're talking about here when we're thinking about other people, not just thinking about ourselves. And mom, of course, and dad affirmed their son in his desire to think about others and how, wow, that must be a hot job that he's doing out there. And then to do something about it, because we're going to find as you continue the study here that compassion is empathy or a feeling with an action point. And so when children move forward with compassion, it says they're not just feel bad for somebody, but they're willing to do something about it. Some children might feel bad about another child and something that went wrong, but they don't know what to do. Compassion puts the feet to that so they know how to move forward. Caring about others is a significant part of the conscience as well.
And so as you think about these four parts of the conscience and about your child, you may choose to pick one part of the conscience to be focusing on, to be talking about, to be highlighting and pointing out in your conversations with your child.
I would encourage you to think about your own conscience for a little bit. As you're going through this study, not only will you become more aware of the Holy Spirit's work in your heart and the conscience's work inside your heart, but you'll be able to have illustrations that you'll use as you talk to your kids. God is at work in your heart, and He's placed a conscience there. So if you yell at your kids and then feel guilty about it, there's the conscience that's prompting you, saying, you know, shouldn't have done that. And you want to be able to acknowledge that and respond well to it. Instead of defending yourself and saying, well, they deserved it, you want to acknowledge that and respond to the guilt in a way that is most godly. As you think about the conscience at work in your own life, then you'll come across various examples of times you've done the right thing, or you've dealt with wrongs in the right way, or you've been honest, even though maybe tempted to be dishonest, or when others are doing something dishonest, you've chosen the honesty route. All of those things are going to be helpful, and they'll become illustrations for you as you work forward with your child. So be thinking of ways to develop the conscience in your own heart, and that'll help you as you're trying to work it out with your child as well.
I think just spending some time thinking about the conscience, being thoughtful about how the conscience prompts you as a parent, it can then lead to some good conversations with your child about the conscience as well.
I would encourage you to take some things from this audio session, read the lesson that accompanies it, and jot down some things that you're learning. Keep a journal, some things you'd like to think about some more, develop some more, maybe even choose something to talk about with your child. Use the conversation starters that are mentioned in the book. about meeting with your child and talking to your child about some of these things, and see what the Lord will do in enhancing your relationship with your child, but also encouraging the dialogue about these very important issues regarding internal motivation. May God richly bless you as you continue to study and work to develop the parenting skills that will enhance your opportunities to develop internal motivation in your kids. God is moving.